Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk. On the phone with us today is Dr. Meg Meeker, one of the co-hosts of this ministry, and she's also a pediatrician, as you all know. And her training and her background will make her insights today very relevant to our topic. Dr. Meg, we got in touch with you at the last minute here, but we have a very inspirational program for our listeners today, and I know you're excited about it too.
I don't know the Santorums, but I feel like I know their beautiful little girl, Bella, and today is a great day of celebration, so I am happy to join in at the last minute.
Well, they're on the phone with us, and I'm delighted that they could join us again at the last minute. I learned about the celebration today on the internet, and so this has come up at the last minute. In fact, we are recording what we're saying on Tuesday, the 13th of May. And it will be aired several days later. So that is the date of a birthday that we want to talk about. The two people you've mentioned already, Meg, the Santorums, are two people that I've come to love and admire. They are the former Senator Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania. Most of our listeners will know him or know of him. And his wife, Karen, is on the phone. And they have a wonderful family. And I've watched them carefully through the years. And one of their children is a child that we just mentioned. Her name is Bella, who turned 6 years of age today. And that is what we want to talk about. This is a day for celebration. Senator Rick and Karen, thank you for joining us at the last minute here.
Thank you for having us, Dr. Dobson.
Any day is a good day to talk about our little girl. So we were honored that you'd call us and invite us on the program. Thank you.
In fact, when you ran for the presidency last time, you talked about Bella a lot. And people are always very moved to learn about her. I think she's being followed and prayed for by people all across the country. This is Bella's sixth birthday. You never expected to see this day, did you?
We did not, but we certainly hoped and prayed for it. Bella was our eighth baby, and when we were pregnant with our first, I come from a whole family of doctors, and my dad, who was a pediatrician and a geneticist, gave us great advice, Dr. Dobson. We talked about prenatal testing and all the pros and cons, and in the end, after that, we decided, because of my dad's good advice, not to do prenatal testing.
In other words, you didn't even have an amniocentesis to tell what you were dealing with. You knew you had a baby that was going to be disabled, but you didn't know the scope of it. Is that correct?
It was interesting because all of the tests that were done, that the doctors really couldn't figure it out, it could have been all the markers that Bella had could have been within normal limits, and they could have been very severe, where she wouldn't survive after birth.
Mm. You know, for us, it didn't really matter. You know, the amniocentesis, for example, I mean, is, you know, there are risks associated to your baby to do an amnio, and the only purpose that, you know, Karen's dad was really clear about this. I mean, the only purpose is really to diagnose a problem in the womb, and there's very little you can do in the womb. So the only reason for the diagnosis is to prepare you or to prepare the doctor. But we're prepared for anything, and we didn't really care. We love our children from the moment we find out about them, and we're not really interested in any kind of test that could be used and is used often to convince parents to terminate the pregnancy, and because that's not something we would ever consider.
Hmm. Dr. Meg, as a pediatrician, you understand the scope of Bella's disorder. She has Edwards syndrome, which
yes,
is a chromosomal anomaly.
Yes. It's really a trisomy 18, I believe. And I'm so glad to hear that you were advised or that you decided not to do an amnio and And the truth is, ultrasounds are so good today that you can troubleshoot most problems. You know, if you needed to have a certain specialist there at the delivery to take care of any issues that a baby might have, you know, ultrasound's wonderful as well. So I applaud your decision out there. People should know, though, that with a pregnancy like that, I believe about 50% of children born with trisomy 18 do not make it. Is that what you were told?
It's actually higher than that. We were told that the numbers, we've looked at the numbers, that 90% of children diagnosed with Edwards syndrome, trisomy 18, die at or before birth. Mm-hmm. And of those that survive, 90% die within the first year. So it's a 1% survival rate for a year.
So you were willing, Karen, to carry that baby to term, knowing that you were going to go through the pregnancy and delivery and then probably have to say goodbye to a severely disabled child.
Yes, and we didn't really even know. And after Bella's birth, we were so happy and so relieved. Like I say, she was our ace baby, but she was my first C-section, and I thank God for that C-section because a lot of trisomy 18 infants cannot tolerate the birth.
I mean, I hate to say this, Karen. I mean, we know this to be true, that a lot of physicians will go ahead and deliver a child not through C-section, knowing full well that it's going to further compromise the child. But there's you know, Karen talks about this all the time, how the words and the medical definition of trisomy 18 is incompatible with life. Right. And so they actually think they're doing the family a favor by having the child die in the birthing process as opposed to giving her the best chance through a C-section.
Here's what's so sad about the world we're in now. I was a NICU nurse, and like I say, my whole family are physicians, so they were helping us and guiding us through. And thank God for that, because we knew sort of certain things that helped us along this journey. What is so, so very sad is that so many of these kids are abandoned after birth, because I think in medical school and at the medical conferences, students and physicians are taught, and then it's reinforced that trisomy 18 kids don't survive, they don't live, they're not worth the care. And it's truly, truly tragic that they're sort of put in the NICUs and abandoned. And that's sort of what we're finding out. It is the most beautiful thing, having a little girl with trisomy 18. We would not trade Bella for anything in the world. And my apostolic work now is every single week I'm on the phone with parents, many, many parents. And what I have found on this journey is that they have to fight so hard for even basic care. And so it's a very beautiful world, because you're blessed with this angel from heaven. But it's also a very sad world, because, you know, too often I think parents have to fight for basic care. I think the statistics and the death rates are so high because they're denied care. There's an article called Lethal Language, Lethal Outcome. And doctors at CHOP gave us this article because they really believe in just giving kids a chance. And what this article is basically saying is, when you say things like incompatible with life, it's a lethal diagnosis, and that's all you ever get with trisomy 18.
Yeah.
It affects the care and the direction that they take.
Karen, you and Rick fell in love with that baby right from the start, didn't you? You knew that baby and loved that baby before she was born.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. It was a beautiful pregnancy.
What was her condition at birth? Do they do an Apgar on an Edwards baby?
Yes, they did. She had normal, you know, fairly normal Apgar scores, a little low, but not too bad at all. And in fact, we were encouraged because, again, we hadn't done any amnio or genetic testing. And so it wasn't until about 4 or 5 days later, until the genetic test came back, that we actually confirmed. And we had our suspicions, but she was doing reasonably well. And again, our feeling was it doesn't matter. I mean, we are just blessed with this beautiful little girl. We committed to, I mean, Karen leading the charge on this, you know, just fighting for her, fighting to make sure that she's treated just like every other child and given the opportunity, you know, to be who God wanted her to be, and for as long as God wanted us to have her.
What did the physicians tell you when Bella arrived about how long she would live? What kind of information were you given?
her birth, we were optimistic that things were going to be fine. We had doctors at CHOP lined up to do surgery. We were going to transfer her there. We thought that, you know, just in case things didn't look so good. But she was actually doing well, and we breathed a big sigh of relief after her birth. She was so, so cute, and she looked good. It wasn't until she started holding her hands in a way that is just a classic marker for trisomy 18 that was the red flag, and then that's when we did the genetic testing and found out 4 days later that that's what it was.
How did your children react to Bella's birth?
Well, I mean, we lost a baby, so we're raising seven kids. And it depended on their ages. The older children understood the gravity of the situation, and they cried a lot. But we also had to tend to their tender hearts and make sure we were explaining things in age-appropriate ways, you know, about the NICU and what to expect. And, you know, before the children went to the NICU, we explained that everything there was there to help Bella, and we explained, you know, what the, you know, machines and tubes and things were according to their ages. And then we also told them that if Bella were to go, that a legion of angels was going to come and take her, and that she was going to go straight into our Lord's arms and be there in heaven. And but it's such a hard emotional time, and any parents going through that, it just goes right to your heart and soul. And so we just held them and prayed, and Rick was very strong. You know, he was just great, holding the family together. He was a very, very good husband and father during that time.
Rick, what touches me so much from this is that you give value and worth to every individual. You know, I knew a man who was going, he and his wife were going to adopt a baby, and they ask all kind of questions like, were drugs involved, and is there any physical problem, and that kind of thing. And then he realized that it was like kicking tires on a car. You know, you're talking about a human being here. You're not asking for perfection. You're thankful to God that he gave you a little human being, and you have an opportunity to care for and minister to. I know that it changes the nature of your family, and it changes life, but that's the assignment God gives, and my heart goes out to those that see it the way you do.
Well, you know, every child has their challenges. We at Karen and I have a lot of experience in this. We're raising seven amazing children, but I think everybody who's raised a child will tell you, you've got your moments of joy, you got your moments of heartache and struggle, and there's no easy road in parenthood, and, you know, and a special needs child provides a different and sometimes certainly a harder road. You know, Bella requires a lot of care. Karen is a saint. I mean, the amount of time and energy that she puts in and for Bella and her care, and as she mentioned, fighting for care. I mean, we've been blessed. She mentioned CHOP, which is Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. They've been an amazing hospital for us to be able to deal with and helping us with Bella. But, you know, we also realize that a lot of families, you know, sit there and say, wow, you know, do we have the support network? Do we have a hospital? And they don't. I don't want to minimize the challenges that a special needs child is, but I also don't want to minimize the joy, the unbelievable joy that Bella has brought to this family. And because she's different, because she is who she is, and we have four boys, and our boys have some of the biggest hearts in the world. And I know why, because of that little girl has just opened up a world to them and as young men, and seeing the vulnerable, seeing how beautiful that disability in many respects is, I see them and how they treat other people. And they have that heart that they develop through Bella in seeing people who may be a little different, and they don't look at them the way the world does. They look at them through the eyes of their sister, and it's a beautiful thing to see.
Does it grieve your hearts that you don't see Down syndrome out in public very often these days because most of them are aborted? I think it's 90 to 95% of babies that is still in the womb are aborted because of amniocentesis and because people don't want to bring them into the world, and yet they are the most loving, caring, beautiful children that God made.
Well, it is tragic, but you're right. A very, very high percentage of children who are diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted because the physician is advocating that these are children who are not going to, you know, this is going to be stressful on you, and it's too much, and these children are going to live lives that are worthless and not have any value, won't be able to do anything, all of which is an absolute lie. We know lots of families with Down syndrome children who, that's trisomy 21, an extra 21st chromosome. They have T-shirts that say that the extra 24th chromosome is called the love chromosome, because these children are just, like Bella, is just full of love and full of beauty and wonder. And, you know, it's a society that's oriented toward perfection, and there isn't an interest in taking the good with the bad of raising a child with a disability, and that's a real tragedy. And one of the reasons that Karen and I have been so outspoken with Bella is because we want people to see the beauty of these children, how special they are in all the right ways.
The greatest blessings really come through the imperfections, not the perfections, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, these children are different, but they're beautiful and they bring enormous joy. If you think about it, you know, what the value of the person is it just an economic value? And if that's all it is, then we have debased ourselves as a society. And these children bring so much to a family, so much to the world, and to everybody they meet. And that's what we have to focus on, the complete picture, not just the economic value.
Yeah. You know, Senator, as I listen to you talk, I think that you are saying what I've heard so many of my patients in my practice with special needs kids have said. I have never, ever heard a parents say, we're sorry that we gave birth to this child, or that the child has been anything but a blessing to the entire family. And I think expectations are so important to consider as well. I think that so many times in our culture, we as parents and physicians want to bring about perfect children and make their lives perfect and have them perfect. But the truth of the matter is, so many things could happen. And I think that we really need to check our attitudes about all of our kids and say we are willing to see our children as blessings no matter what stage of life, no matter what their limitations. And when we do that, God just pours his blessings onto each of us and our children when we assume that attitude. And I'm just so grateful that our listeners can hear your hearts about little Bella as you talk.
Let's talk about Bella now. She's 6 years old today. Tell us what her life is like. What is her speech like? What's her relationship with the kids? Just give us a window into her.
Bella's so sweet. I'll never forget in the NICU, we were just holding her and loving her and trying to pack a lifetime of love into what we thought was going to be a brief life. And I remember singing her this one lullaby and thinking, oh, my heart was aching, thinking, I'll never know you. But of course, we were hoping and praying, and it's so beautiful because she has this spunky little personality, and she loves being silly, and she loves laughing, and she's always right at the heart of our family. You know, we love playing board games in my family, so she's right there in the middle, and the kids will give her a deck of some cards or, you know, board games, and she'll be right there as if she's playing, and when we're cooking and baking, she's right there in the kitchen. But she knows it, and she feels that joy, and she's so sweet. From the moment we wake her up in the morning till the time she goes to bed, and this really is true, she just smiles and she radiates this joy. And I was told a little while ago that happiness is a human thing, but joy is divine. And that's all I can say. I feel like she is looking at our Lord and the angels. She sees angels. She sees what we don't. And that's why she's such a happy child, and she has such a beautiful life. And when our kids play the piano, she loves to put her little hands on their hands and as if she's playing. Very sweet.
What is the scope of her disability now?
It's profound. I mean, we were told she would never talk or walk or do anything, basically, and she's learning to walk with a walker, and we always say she doesn't speak English, but she speaks Bellish, and we always know what she's saying. She has her own little language, and anyone out there with special kids knows what I mean.
Do you have a sense that she can receive information from the kids, emotion, gesture. She understands on some level that she's being loved and cared for.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question from my mind that she understands love. She gives love. I said Bella can't do a lot, but she does one thing really well, and she does receive and give love. And Bella likes to be the center of attention. I mean,
she's so cute.
If you're not paying attention to her, she'll let you know. And
she loves her physical therapy. She is just so happy when she's doing her exercises and swinging on her swing and bouncing on her balls and going for her walks. And she's just fun. She really makes life simple and beautiful.
And she really does feed off the human interaction. There's no question about that. And so, you know, I know a lot of children have a lot of different ranges of abilities. And we just feel blessed that even though Bella, you know, really can't, quote, do anything for herself, she can't feed herself or all these types of things. But, you know, what she can do is, to us, as we found the most important thing, which is that she can love us. And and when it's all said and done, that's the greatest blessing of all.
Exactly.
What is her medical condition now, and what's the prognosis?
Well, to be honest with you, she's healthy, and, you know, she doesn't have any heart problems or lung problems or anything. I mean, she's healthy, but she's got some anomalies that make her very vulnerable to... if she were to get sick or, you know, maybe have some other conditions develop later because of the anomalies in her genetic system. So we don't know what's in store for us. A lot of these children do end up with certain disorders, certain diseases. We've been blessed so far. None of those have cropped up with Bella. We have, as you know, from the campaign, when we had to suspend the campaign once and then ultimately permanently, when Bella gets sick, she gets very, very sick.
And so we're very careful about germs.
Yeah, so she's vulnerable in that way. But so far, she's physically very healthy, and we're just very blessed with that.
On a daily basis, she's not requiring oxygen or medications.
She doesn't take any medication.
Yes, she's just doing great, thank God. She is really, really doing well. And, you know, it's interesting. Rick mentioned that hospitalization when he was running. We were really protective of Bella and never had her out on the campaign trail, I think, except when you announced. And when she did end up in the hospital, I will never forget this moment. Bella was recovering, and she was sitting up in her bed and playing with her toys, and she's just giggling and smiling. And when Bella smiles, it's like there's just ray of sunshine around her. And there's this big, muscular, athletic physician standing at the foot of her bed, and there's tears running down his face. And I was taken back. I said, "Doctor, are you okay?" He said, I didn't know kids like Bella existed. He said, "I feel so lied to." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Because in medical school, all they teach us is that these kids don't live." And he had this moment of joy seeing Bella and her beautiful life, but anger that he felt so lied to. And I have friends who go to these medical conferences, and I love physicians. Like I say, I come from a family of physicians, and they do so much good, but there are some medical conferences that would just shock you. There was one at Yale, and the title was Trisomy 18, To Treat or Not to Treat. Mm. And two of my friends went who have trisomy 18 kids, and for an hour they sat there while everyone was saying, don't do anything, let them go. And at the end of the conference, they both stood up and said, we've been listening. And just in a very beautiful, loving way, they shared the stories of their trisomy 18 kids. Where all these future physicians were, half the audience was in tears. One of the physicians was really mad at them because he was one who didn't think they should be given any care. But I think with education, I think it's a good thing to let people know that these kids, there is hope. And a lot of these kids, there's a lot of kids out there, many more than Rick and I ever thought. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are doing really well. And I think that's our mission right now, is to get the word out that these statistics that people keep reiterating are not accurate.
I'm going to have to step in here because our time is gone. Do you all have time to stay with us, and we'll let people hear tomorrow what we're about to say?
We would love to.
Yeah, we can do that.
We're talking to former Senator Rick Santorum and his wife Karen about their little girl Bella, who has turned 6 years of age as we are recording. And this is a great day for celebration. Our time is gone, but I want to continue talking to you all about it because this has such great implications. And Meg, I know you feel this way too. Such
yes.
implications
for
the way we see children. All of them are less than perfect. None of them are perfect. And all of them cost us a lot to raise them. But love is what's required in all situations. And we'll pick this up next time. Thank you, Santorum family, for being who you are and for the model that you are displaying for family life and for the value of human worth by what you've done on behalf of and with this little child, Bella. Blessings to you both.
And God bless you, too. Thank you, Dr. Dobson.
Okay, you bet.
Thank you. Well, what a powerful story about life. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and if you would like more information about the ministry here at Family Talk, you can call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in as we continue our conversation with Senator Rick and Karen Santorum next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.